Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ciao, we viva, cat bang, half a day, chai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA. Home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and hope you're having a good weekend, safe weekend. Halloween was Friday. I've been hearing those, you know, you hear those annual horror stories, you know, like people used to put razor blades and apples for the kids for trick-or-treat, you know, and now, I mean, it's even more scary. People give them milk chocolate actually mixed with the milk of a cow. It's very scary, very scary. And did you make the Hollywood party scene? You know, people like to dress up, you know. I like to go as a normal person. Nobody can recognize me. And, you know, there were some creative costumes this Halloween. You know, the Humane Society of the United States came as an animal protection organization, if you can imagine that, and I know you probably can't. Wayne Pacelli came as a pig farmer. Hey, you're supposed to wear a costume, Wayne. Joe Maxwell came as a vegan. And Paul Shapiro came as a vegan also, if you could believe that. And holy cow, was he hoofing it on the dance floor? I tell you, that Paul Shapiro. Then Mercy for Animals came in Nestle's Hot Pockets. Farm Sanctuary's Bruce Friedrich came as a heritage turkey. And Wayne Shun showed up in a costume made of Bruce Friedrich's old Chipotle takeout bags. So people were having a great time this Halloween. Larry, the guy in the Quaker Oats box, you know, came as an unhealthy cereal disguised in a puddle of pus called cow's milk. We talked about that on last week's show, how the guy on the Quaker Oats box, he's called Larry, has now donned the disgusting milk mustache. I mean, what, Larry? After 137 years, now you become embarrassed that you can't grow facial hair, so it has to come to this, Larry. You know, I mean, your cereal actually would be healthier if you included facial hair in the cooking instructions instead of the bovine mammary secretions that you now endorse. You're killing me, Larry. Anyway, if you still have leftover Halloween cow's milk chocolate around the house, treat it like the Ebola virus, you know, and you know, those skeletons you have decorating the walls, those hanging bones of death. Well, maybe they actually got into the, you know, milk chocolate Halloween treats, those hanging bones of death. New study being publicized by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. It says, drinking milk associated with fractures and death. High cow's milk intake is associated with increased risk for bone fractures and death, according to a new study in the British Medical Journal. Researchers followed 61,433 women and 45,339 men for more than 20 years. That was women they followed for 20 years and the men they followed for 11 years, respectively. And among women, those who consumed three or more glasses of cow's milk per day had a 60% increased risk for developing a hip fracture and a 16% increased risk for developing any bone fracture. These results are similar to previous studies showing no protective effect of increased milk consumption on fracture risk. People are drinking milk to protect against fractures. You're coming to the wrong place. It says here, additionally, among women, for each glass of milk consumed, risk of dying from all causes increased by 15%, from heart disease by 15%, and from cancer by 7%. For the women who consumed three or more glasses of milk per day compared with less than one glass, the risk of dying increased by 93%. Perhaps that's worth repeating, since you may not hear that anywhere else. For the women who consumed three or more glasses of milk per day compared with less than one glass, risk of dying increased by 93%. Men had a 10% increased risk of dying when consuming three or more glasses of milk per day compared with less than one glass. So, you thought milk was good for your bones and good for your health? You thought milk did a body good? I think apparently it does a body in. So there you have it. More scary dairy information for you on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And I hope you're having an enjoyable weekend. I thought I was, went off to the farmer's market. I'm just about ready to put the potatoes and the beets and the cauliflower and the Brussels sprouts in the pot here. And Daisy, the wonderful rescue chihuahua love of my life, loves raw cauliflower. So we're going to feast on that in a little bit after today's program. And, but I go to the farmer's market, and again, there's the barbecue going on, and it seems more and more meat being sold there. I thought it was a farmer's market, not a rancher's market. So it's really, it's just kind of ruined the experience for me. Then I took Daisy off, to a nice place to walk by the waterfront, and we usually go there during the week, and we were there on Saturday, and on the rocks there, it was, so many people who were, all of these fish-killing people were on the rocks, and, we're walking along behind. Of course, they don't look when they're, casting. I figure they're going to, throw their hook behind us and, grab us or, hook onto Daisy's harness and throw her in the water there. But it's just ruins the weekend, when people, they're out for a good time, and what they do is they're killing someone. It really, and the fishing, of course, is just all deception. Where's the sport in that? It's just all trickery. I'm there secretly wishing, telling the fish, it's a trick. Go swim for your lives. Is there so much trickery in other sport too? Maybe there's some trickery in sport. Now that I think about it, why does the catcher is giving signals to the pitcher, but he hides the signals with the catcher's mitt? Why does he have to be so deceptive? Let the pitcher pitch a good pitch and let the batter, go for it. And then the third base coach is also giving signals to the batter. Hey. If the batter wants to bunt, let the batter bunt. You don't have to, all of this, And then fake handoffs in football? I don't know. All this trickery, it's kind of strange to me. And trickery, in the form of, when people are denying that there's something going on with the climate, it's really, I don't know if you look at the statistics, you know, in September was my birthday, and seemed like you know, just the candles caught fire on their own. You know, it was the hottest September ever, and this being the hottest September ever, we are on pace now for the hottest year ever. Again, it seems like month after month we're setting records. And I do remind you that climate change and all of these records that we're setting are all caused by the consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. If you eat flesh, if you eat dairy, you know, you eat eggs, if you eat fish. And it's not to blame you. It's, you know, let's take responsibility for it, you know, and let's go vegan. As we hear that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, the number one cause responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Well, every month where we set the record has to do with meat, dairy, fish, and egg consumption. I mean, I think it is getting reported now in lamestream media. The report on the hottest September ever being reported even on NBC now, okay, where it says September brought more record heat globally, and meteorologists say Earth is now on pace to tie for the hottest year ever recorded. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced Monday that last month, the globe averaged 60.3 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 15.7 Celsius. That was the hottest September in 135 years of record keeping since Larry was on the Quaker Oats box. All that time, you know, that's all that time. This is the hottest September ever. And, you know, we can blame Larry with his milk pustache for that too. You know, cows being the source of methane, estimated to be up to 100 times worse than carbon in the greenhouse gas equation. We'll continue on this discussion coming up on today's show. Professor Gary Steiner, who will be speaking at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. He's up next hour along with Professor Gary Francione and his animal rights commentary. You can register right now at worldvegansummit.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Now broadcasting for 13 years, our 14th anniversary will be in January. As heard all these years, well, we were on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, now nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, GCN. We are live Sundays. Now it's 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Yeah, today it's dark early. Not my favorite time of year when this happens. I don't like it getting dark at 5 o'clock like this. But spring ahead, fall back. Except now, I guess we just depend on our cell phone to be smart enough. The smartphone should know it. I hope I'm doing the show at the right time. Or what, am I an hour late? No, it's right. Okay, we're at the right time here, now we have to do the show with the lights on. How do you like that? So remember when the light bulb, when we changed light bulbs, that was going to cure our environmental problems. We were going to save ourselves from climate change by changing the light bulbs or increasing miles per gallon. You know, here in California with the election coming up on Tuesday, the pro-fracking Democrat governor, Jerry Brown, telling us that you know, the cure to the drought, you know, our climate change problem is don't take that glass of water when you eat out at a restaurant. Decline the glass of water. So as I keep saying, though, you know, a vegan needs 10,000 gallons of water to grow his or her food in a year, such as I. And someone who consumes meat, dairy, fish, and eggs would consume, would require at least 320,000 gallons of water. So, you know, for Jerry Brown's formula, you know, one vegan accomplishes what over 4 million people going to, a restaurant and declining that glass of water would do. And, as you know, the most credible world scientists in the field of climate change at the World Bank tell us that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, and the only way to save us on time would be a massive shift. 50 to 85% of what are now consumed as so-called animal products, we have to shift to vegan products by 2020, or 1,700 U.S. cities are threatened with submersion. The polar ice will melt. We just had our hottest September in 135 years of record keeping. It was also the fourth monthly record set this year. May, June, and August were also the hottest months in history. NASA, which measures temperatures slightly differently, had already determined that September was a record-setting month for heat. And the first 9 months of 2014 have a global average temperature of 58.7 degrees, that's 14.78 degrees Celsius, tying with 1998 for the warmest first 9 months on record, according to NOAA's National Climatic Data Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Quoting, it says, "It's pretty likely that 2014 will break the record for hottest year," said NOAA climate scientist Jessica Blunden. The record-breaking heat goes back to the end of last year. November 2013 broke a record. So the last 12 months from October 2013 to September 2014 are the hottest 12 consecutive month period ever on record. Blunden said, Earth hasn't set a monthly record for cold since December of 1916, but all monthly heat records have been set after 1997. So I would say don't listen to 350.org and Bill McKibben. You don't get this information, unfortunately, on the wonderful Democracy Now! It is only here where we gather and say, let's get together at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, March 2021 and 22, and figure out how we can get the world to go vegan and save the animals and the climate. You can register right now at worldvegansummit.com. On Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Thank you for joining us, we hope you'll be joining us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Up next hour, we'll be talking to one of the speakers there, Professor Gary Steiner, professor of philosophy at Bucknell University, at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. His topics will include animals in the history of Western thought and 10 mistakes people make about what it means to be vegan. The subject matter at this event is quite compelling, and I would say that really probably the best holiday gift you could give to anyone on your list, your close friends, family members, people who really care about animals, would be registration at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. It would really be a special gift for really a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can see what it's about at worldvegansummit.com. We have a Facebook page, and folks attending there will be gathering to strategize and talk about how we can help the world go vegan. This is the most important cause to us, and it covers everything. It covers everything from the moral implications to agriculture, veganic agriculture, and health issues, environment, and all. And I'd like to thank Nature's Flavors for support of the World Vegan Summit and Expo, naturesflavors.com, and its Select Brand, S-E-E-L-E-C-T. You've seen Select Brand coffee and tea at natural food stores, and we will be consuming Select organic coffee and tea at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And look for all the vegan products from Nature's Flavors, a company with thousands of products. They're all vegan, including Birdie and Bill's natural sodas and baking mixes. If you want to make vegan, sugar-free, gluten-free chocolate brownies, well, I think you can only get them from Select. So, and Select brand products are at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga and in Santa Monica. Rancho Cucamonga, one of the largest vegan grocery stores in the world, perhaps the largest vegan grocery store in the world. And in Santa Monica, just short distance away from where we'll be having the World Vegan Summit and Expo March 2021 and 22 at the Marina del Rey Marriott. Walking distance, a few blocks to Venice Beach, right there near Santa Monica, and a very special event. The registrations are meals inclusive, and you can check out the sample menu we have on the website at worldvegansummit.com, and you will want to be there. And this is part of the evolution, the vegan evolution, really, that started in November of 1944, yes, it was 70 years ago this month that the first edition of Vegan News was printed in the UK. I seem to see a copy of that right now in front of me. It was called The Vegan News, quarterly magazine of the non-dairy vegetarians. So history was made, November 1944. Just looking at the Vegan News, it says here, quoting, "The recent articles and letters in the Vegetarian Messenger on the question of the use of dairy produce," I guess produce and products probably would be synonymous in this case. "The recent articles and letters in the Vegetarian Messenger on the question of the use of dairy produce have revealed very strong evidence to show that the production of these foods involves much cruel exploitation and slaughter of highly sentient life. The excuse that it is not necessary to kill in order to obtain dairy produce is untenable for those with a knowledge of livestock farming methods and of the competition which even humanitarian farmers must face if they are to remain in business. For years, many of us accepted, as lacto-vegetarians, that the flesh food industry and the dairy produce industry were related, and that in some ways they subsidized one another. We accepted, therefore, that the case on ethical grounds for the disuse of these foods was exceptionally strong, and we hoped that sooner or later a crisis in our conscience would set us free. That freedom has now come to us. Having followed a diet free from all animal food for periods varying from a few weeks in some cases to many years in others, we believe our ideas and experiences are sufficiently mature to be recorded. So let's see, continuing here. Oh, okay, to be recorded. Okay, the unquestionable cruelty associated with the production of dairy produce has made it clear that lacto-vegetarianism is but a halfway house between flesh-eating and a truly humane, civilized diet. And we think, therefore, that during our life on Earth, we should try to evolve sufficiently to make the full journey. We can see quite plainly that our present civilization is built on the exploitation of animals, just as past civilizations were built on the exploitation of slaves. And we believe the spiritual destiny of man is such that in time he will view with abhorrence the idea that men once fed on the products of animals' bodies. And let me skip ahead here a little bit. And again, this is from 1944. A common criticism is that the time is not yet ripe for our reform. Why, we still hear that today, don't we? I'm quoting here from the first Vegan Times, November 1944. 70 years ago. A common criticism is that the time is not yet ripe for our reform. Can time ever be ripe for any reform unless it is ripened by human determination? Did Wilberforce wait for the ripening of time before he commenced his fight against slavery? Did Edwin Chadwick, Lord Shaftesbury, and Charles Kingsley wait for such a non-existent moment before trying to convince the great dead weight of public opinion that clean water and bathrooms would be an improvement? If they had declared their intention to poison everybody, the opposition they met could hardly have been greater. There is an obvious danger in leaving the fulfillment of our ideals to posterity, for posterity may not have our ideals. Evolution can be retrogressive as well as progressive. Indeed, there seems always to be a strong gravitation the wrong way unless existing standards are guarded and new visions honored. For this reason, we have formed our group, the first of its kind, we believe, in this or any other country. So here they are. They were organizing the first vegan group, and they were saying, we can't put this off, and we can't let people in the future do it because we don't know what the people in the future will be thinking or doing. Well, the people in the future are thinking and doing we are putting together the World Vegan Summit and Expo as part of this evolution and revolution that needs to happen. And continuing in the first, from the first vegan, the first vegan news, issue one. Wanted, a name, it says here. We should all consider carefully what our group and our magazine and ourselves shall be called. Non-dairy has become established as a generally understood colloquialism, but like non-lacto, it is too negative. Moreover, it does not imply that we are opposed to the use of eggs as food. We need a name that suggests what we do eat, and if possible, one that conveys the idea that even with all animal foods taboo, nature still offers us a bewildering assortment from which to choose. Vegetarian and fruitarian are already associated with societies that allow the fruits, in quotes, of cows and fowls. Therefore, it seems we must make a new and appropriate word. As this first issue of our periodical had to be named, I have used the word, or I have I have used the title, The Vegan News. Should we adopt this, our diet will soon become known as a vegan diet, and we should aspire to the rank of vegans. Members' suggestions will be welcomed. The virtue of having a short title is best known to those of us who, as secretaries of vegetarian societies, have to type or write the word vegetarian thousands of times a year. So isn't that interesting? This is how the word came to be and was first given to the world in the Vegan News. So there, we start with the vegan diet, and we aspire to be vegans. It also talks in this about our relations with the lacto-vegetarians. You know, I do find it interesting that at least in the good old days there of Donald Watson, and, you know, some years not even that long ago, we were saying lacto-vegetarian and ovo-vegetarian, and we have dropped those now and have just allowed the word vegetarian to presume inclusion of animal products, which is unfortunate. I'll continue then with what is said about our relations with the lacto-vegetarians when we continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And please do register now. It's a great gift idea. Register for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, worldvegansummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And I want to thank our friends at Vegetarian House Restaurant in San Jose for support for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Vegetarian House is one of my favorite restaurants in all the world. It is a San Jose landmark at 520 East Santa Clara Street. And wherever you are in the Bay Area, if you're having an upcoming event, a business event, social function, if you're getting married, Vegetarian House caters, and it will make your event very special indeed. Go to vegetarianhouse.us. Check out the unbelievable international menu there, and, you know, head on over if you can stop by if you're in the Bay Area. Have Vegetarian House cater for you. Again, the website is vegetarianhouse.us, 520 East Santa Clara Street. And coming up next hour, we'll be talking to Professor Gary Steiner, one of the speakers at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And also next hour, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione, who will be conducting a number of sessions at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, including explanation and introduction to the abolitionist approach and a couple of grassroots vegan activist workshops throughout that weekend, March 20, 21, and 22 of 2015 at the Marina del Rey Marriott in Southern California. And you can register right now at worldvegansummit.com. Of course, we will have a tribute to Donald Watson, who gave us the word vegan. I don't know, what would we be calling ourselves that weekend if we were all, you know, just running around, you know, hey, fill in the blank, you know, who knows. And although the concept, you know, I was reading from the first Vegan Times, which was from November 1944, the vegan concept, though, is thousands of years old. If you consider, you know, the Bible, people seem to skip that page. You know, right in the beginning of the Bible, Genesis book 1, verse 29, that, you know, it's kind of God's first commandment is that we be vegan. Okay. All right. Well, we jump ahead from thousands of years ago to 1944 and Donald Watson and the formation of a vegan society in the UK and the publication of the first Vegan News. And I read from that before the break. In the first Vegan News, he also talks about our relations with the lacto-vegetarians. And he says, quoting here, "The object of our group is to state a case for a reform that we think is moral, safe, and logical. In doing so, we shall, of course, say strongly why we condemn the use of dairy products or produce, why we condemn the use of dairy produce and eggs. In return, we shall expect to be criticized. It will be no concern of ours. It will be no concern of ours if we fail to convert others, but we do think it should concern them if, deep in their hearts, they know we are right. Are you listening now, lacto-ovo-vegetarian friends here?" Continuing, it says, "In any case, there need be no animosity between ourselves and the lactos," who really, if you think about it, are still really meat eaters, huh? If you come right down to it. I hate to say it, but, you know, I mean, if you're consuming cow's milk or eggs, I mean, why not eat the cow or the bird? You may as well, because she will be a hamburger after she can produce milk no more. Anyway, during recent years, the two National Vegetarian Societies have devoted much space in their magazines to this question of the use of dairy product, and we have every reason to believe they will attach importance to our work and occasionally report on it. If he only knew what he was starting back then, right? Pretty amazing. Anyway, we will have a tribute to Donald Watson at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and I urge you to register now and join us there. The website is worldvegansummit.com, and for archives and podcasts and to make a donation to this program, you can go to goveganradio.com. Second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, GCN. We are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, now Pacific Standard Time. As you notice, we have to do the program with the lights on today. Okay. Well, we hope to turn the light on for you, too, and help you to go vegan, and we'd love to have you attend the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and I think pretty much every week now leading up to that event on March 20, 21, and 22, I would like to have guests who will be speaking there, and my next guest will be speaking there, Professor Gary Steiner, who is a he's the John Howard Harris Professor of Philosophy at Bucknell University, and he has his PhD in philosophy from Yale and BA in philosophy from Berkeley, he has authored numerous books, including Animals and the Limits of Postmodernism, Descartes as a Moral Thinker, Anthropocentrism and Its Discontents, and Animals and the Moral Community. And welcome, Professor Steiner. How are you today?
I'm just fine. Thanks very much for having me, Bob.
Thanks for being with us. So so you're not with Skull and Bones, or are you?
No, there's a class stratification kind of system at Yale. And if you're just a graduate student, you're just a nobody off the street. I think you have to be, one of the blue blood types at Yale, one of the undergraduates from old money to get into one of those clubs.
Okay. I was going to be extra nice to you because I thought maybe someday, you could appoint me.
I've got no connection. I can do nothing for you, Bob.
Okay. Well, you can come to the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and I'm really happy.
I'm looking forward to coming to my hometown to do that.
Yeah, that'll be terrific. And the subjects you're covering, animals in the history of Western thought and 10 mistakes people make about what it means to be vegan. And so you've specialized in moral and political philosophy with a special focus on the moral status of animals. How did that come to be your interest, and where do you start when talking to people about this?
Well, for me, it's kind of a long and indirect route. I worked on a lot of other things. You mentioned the Descartes book, and I was always interested in ethics and political philosophy, and I've always been interested in problems of the exploitation of vulnerable beings. And we first of all think of human beings because we're human, but it doesn't take very much thinking to get to the point of realizing that the most vulnerable and the most deeply sort of problematically exploited beings are non-human animals, and that they can't defend themselves, they can't speak up for themselves. And I was really, that kind of realization really drew me to the idea that they probably need my help more than most or perhaps all human beings. And that's a very controversial statement to make, but it's one that I really believe. I think that there will always be people out there ready to help people, but people ready to help animals and engage in some kind of altruistic self-sacrifice on behalf of members of some other species, that's relatively unusual in our culture. And it seemed to me that was where I really wanted to put my efforts. And once my position was secure and my employment and everything, once I had tenure, I just really wanted to throw my interests and my efforts and my attention in that direction. And when I think about this, I always like to think about philosophical problems historically, because it turns out to be really revealing. And the first of the three animal books that I wrote, this book that you mentioned, Anthropocentrism and Its Discontents, was a really interesting experience for me because it focused me on this problem that I and some other people call anthropocentrism, which is simply a fancy word that says human beings attribute to themselves a place of centrality and the highest importance in the entire universe. And it's something that you see people doing from the beginnings of culture, and or almost from the beginnings of culture in any rate. And so where I always start with this is the idea that the ancient Greek philosophers, Plato and Aristotle, had in mind, which is if you lack language, or you lack rationality in a kind of a linguistic, predicative, structured sense, then you don't really have moral status, or you don't have full moral status. And so anybody or any being that doesn't speak and doesn't reason the way that humans do gets either given no moral status or is given an inferior moral status compared to human beings. And I find that a really deeply problematic assumption for a lot of reasons, but just to answer your question as briefly as possible, that's the starting point for me, is asking the question, why assume that a being has to think or speak in a human way in order to be recognized to have moral worth? And I'm not sure there's ever been a good answer to that question.
And when you talk about Descartes, from him, didn't we get that animals were machines? I mean, if I'm trying to remember from my...
Yeah, you got it right, exactly. There are people who try to push back on this idea and say that it's kind of an unsophisticated reading of Descartes, but I wrote my doctoral dissertation on Descartes, and then I wrote my first book on Descartes, and I've been through the work on his thinking on animals very thoroughly, and what you said is exactly what it comes down to. He thinks animals are basically biological machines made by God. They have no inner experience at all. So that if an animal screams when you cut into it, it's no different than a tea kettle whistling when the water boils in it. Very quickly after Descartes, there are a lot of philosophers who push back on him, even in his own time, and say, this is ridiculous. Of course animals suffer. But then these same philosophers turn around and say, but the suffering of animals doesn't matter as much as the suffering of human beings. And as Gary Francione, whom I know that you know and is going to be speaking at the summit and expo as well, has pointed out, these thinkers sort of take away with one hand what they've given with the other, because they say, yes, animals can suffer, and this is morally significant, but they always find ways of sort of denigrating or watering down the significance of animal suffering. So Descartes' view was not popular for very long, although there's also a lot of sort of behaviorist-minded people today who think that animals are just sort of very elaborate reaction devices and that they don't have anything going on inside. And anybody who's even spent a little bit of time with animals knows that that's a ridiculous idea. Hmm. I think, anyway.
Absolutely. Well, I'm with you. I'm with you on this. So, and you
well,
had
the organizer of the Vegan Expo. I'm glad to hear that.
Right. You're saying, oh, this seems strange to people. I'm thinking, well, this is so normal. What are you talking about? This is all normal to me.
I would like to see a day when this is everybody realizes that this is just the obvious truth. But we're pretty far from that right now, as you know.
And how did you then become to be a vegan?
Well, you know, I wish I could tell you that I just kind of popped out of the womb with this realization, but it took me a long time. I thought a lot about animals. I've always loved animals, ever since some of my earliest memories. And I started reading when I was a graduate student in the early 80s. I started reading and thinking a lot about animals. In fact, it goes back into the late 70s when I was still an undergraduate. And it became pretty clear to me that I really needed to stop eating animal flesh. And so in 1983, one day I just stopped, and I never ate meat again or animal flesh. But it took me another 13 years, I'm a little embarrassed to say, to get to the point of realizing something that seems to me very obvious right now, which is morally there's no difference between eating animal flesh and eating products like eggs and milk. And as Gary Francione, as I mentioned him before, as Gary Francione likes to point out, there's easily more cruelty in a glass of milk than there is in a steak. These animals are treated pretty horribly, and they end up going to the same slaughterhouses that all the animals that are sourced for meat go to. And it finally came to this realization that animals are not things that you eat, right? Just like people are not things that you eat, animals are not things that you eat. And whenever I encounter people who say, but wait, what if you raise them free range, or you're very nice to them, or you sneak up behind them and you kill them without them knowing you're going to kill them, and it's painless and sudden, I still don't think that that's any kind of a justification, because you'd never do something like that to a human being. And yet people find all kinds of ways of rationalizing doing that to animals. And so there was some point at which I came to the realization that I just had to stop consuming all animal products. But to be even more honest about this, that was when I stopped putting them in my body. But it took me a couple more years before I stopped putting them on my body, because it took me a while to get to the point of realizing, and I should know better than this, being, you know, a person who works on this kind of stuff, that I shouldn't be wearing wool or silk or leather. And I stopped wearing those. And then I started doing more and more research and investigating, finding out what sorts of other everyday products have animals either in them, or, you know, animals used in their production. And, you know, ultimately it's completely impossible in the culture that we live in to be an absolutely 100% squeaky clean vegan. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of very obvious sorts of things that we can stop doing that would have a huge impact on the welfare or the prosperity of animals. You know, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization reports that every year over 50 billion land animals alone are killed for human consumption. And if people just stopped eating them, stopped wearing them, that alone would have a tremendous impact, you know, of benefit to animals, not to mention to the environment. And I think it's just a matter of sort of chipping away more and more, finding out more every day about what are things that I can do to sort of reduce the violence that I inflict on non-human animals? And part of it's talking to people like you and I do.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I just heard new figures that there are actually 176 billion animals who are farmed every year. Those are just the animals who are farmed. The 176 billion, 100 billion are shrimp.
Yeah, I was going to say probably sea creatures.
Yeah, Yeah. And that's just farmed. And then when you think farmed fish, now there's a brilliant concept, because what will they eat? You have to get more fish. You have to feed them fish, you know?
Right. And you have to paint them red in order to make the salmon look, you know,
right.
gray.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, the whole thing. When you think about it, it gets bizarre, you know. And like you, I looked down at a chicken body. I was in Queens College in New York. I looked down. I was cooking a chicken one night and said, "Wait a second, this, you know, it's someone's body. You know, somebody died, didn't volunteer.
Right.
You know." So we're talking to Professor Gary Steiner of Bucknell University, and we will continue with him on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We have to take a break, and you'll see him at the World Vegan Summit. Register worldvegansummit.com. Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. And we're talking to Professor Gary Steiner of Bucknell University, and he will be one of the speakers at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, March 20th through the 22nd at the Marina Del Rey Marriott. You can register right now at worldvegansummit.com. And Professor Steiner, you had an op-ed piece in the New York Times, did you not?
I did.
Yes, it was Animal, Vegetable, Miserable?
That's right.
Tell us a bit about that.
That was the Sunday before Thanksgiving in 2009. And I had the good fortune to get that published, and it was the sort of central question of that op-ed piece was, if you're planning to get yourself a so-called free-range turkey for Thanksgiving this year, does that make what you're doing morally okay? And the answer was absolutely not. And it's partly because you're still killing a sentient being, and it would certainly tell you that it didn't want you to kill it if it were able to tell you in language that you could understand. And the other thing I pointed out in that op-ed piece is, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, free range simply, it has a very loose definition, and it means access to daylight. And so there are, my understanding is, and Gary Francione can tell us more about this, that there are all kinds of birds that never see the light of day. They're in these big airplane hangars, and they have maybe a little tiny trap door in the end. In theory, they could get out into the daylight, but, you know, they're in the same kind of ammonia and stench and filth and dense pack that a lot of birds that are not classified as free range are living in. It doesn't really have any kind of meaning to it. It doesn't make their lives any better, and it certainly doesn't make their deaths any better. And I got a real strong response from people. I'm glad to say that most of it was positive, but there was some negative response, and some of it was actually pretty shrill.
Hmm. And what were the negative responses? What could they be?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I'll tell you this, Bob. I did mention in the op-ed piece that there are some social difficulties that a vegan faces in our society because so many people are not really open to veganism. And there were some self-styled vegan activists who were very critical of me for making veganism sound like anything other than just a stroll in the park. And I was simply going on my own personal experience because I have found that I've run into some real difficulties with, good friends of mine over this. And fortunately, in the long run, what it does is it opens up conversations. But I think a lot of times, and this is one of the things I'm going to talk about in the 10 mistakes that people make about what it means to be vegan talk at the Summit and Expo, is people think that you're doing some moral finger pointing or something like that. And that's not really the spirit in which I pursue it, and I would imagine not the spirit in which you pursue it either. It's all about, you know, doing justice to sentient life and, you know, having a loving rather than a harmful relationship to them. But people feel, I think, very much put on the defensive when you talk about veganism. And if you don't talk about it in just the way they want you to talk about it, they also feel put on the defensive. So that was, I think, the bulk of the negative response, which was, I received about 400 emails, and I'd say about 10% of them were critical. And of the 10% that were critical, the vast majority of those were from people who thought of themselves as vegan activists, who thought I should be, you know, sending the message in a sort of a different way.
Well, but it was a strong vegan message. Was it that you were being criticized for just?
Well, you know, there were a relatively small number of people who actually just criticized the message itself, and it tended to be people who had certain types of rather deeply held religious convictions that are, to use the expression I used before. Religious convictions that are deeply anthropocentric, religious, you know, coming from religious traditions that assume that animals were made
for us to use,
by God,
right?
For people to use, right?
Right. Yeah, you hear
and
that
so
a lot. You hear that a lot. I mean, that's,
you hear it a lot. Hear it a lot, and it all depends. You know, it becomes kind of tricky because, you know, when you talk about people's religious convictions, things get very, very delicate. But it's always worth asking the question. You know, who wrote your favorite sacred text? Was it a human hand? Was it God? You know, is there any, even if you think that God influenced the writing of it, is it possible that some human, you know, ideological bias found its way
We need to take a break. Professor Stern. And also, why don't they want to hear about Genesis 1:29 then, where it says to be vegan, huh? I mean, if that's in the Bible. Okay, we'll continue with Professor Gary Steiner. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. Thank you for joining us. We're happy you're here, and we hope that you'll join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up in March in Marina Del Rey at the Marriott there. You can go to worldvegansummit.com to register now. Gary Steiner, Professor Steiner from Bucknell University, is on the line. He will be speaking there. And now we're joined by Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers, first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school, and his website, abolitionistapproach.com. And he does a weekly commentary here on this program every week at around this time. And how are you today, Professor Francione?
I'm fine. I'm happy to be joining you and Professor Steiner. Hello, Gary. How are you?
I'm good, Gary. Not much has happened in the hour since I talked with you.
Really?
Actually, really? It was a couple hours ago in which I suggested to Gary that we chat about what it's like to be talking about animal rights and veganism in higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hope is the optimism and that Gary shares, because I just was at Bucknell last week, and he certainly got the students excited about veganism and animal rights and talking about it. And so I hope he's as optimistic as I am, that things are going to change. The paradigm will shift. The young people will carry the ball forward. What do you think,
yeah.
Gary?
I think it depends on young people. I mean, I think, you know, there's something about the way gravity works on a body that, you know, by the time you get older, it's harder to change your ways. But, you know, wars are stopped by young people. And I think that revolutions of this kind are going to be brought about by young people. And I see it especially in my, the younger my students are at Bucknell, the more open they are to the message, I think.
Yeah. Mm.
So then I'm suggesting that people then, for a holiday gift, buy a registration for the college students and their family and have them come to the World Vegan Summit and Expo and come out there. And
I suspect suspect there will be a lot of young people there, Bob. I suspect. I mean, just sort of seeing the buzz on the internet. Suspect there will be a lot of young people there.
I just heard from a group at Ohio State who wants to come out there. The Ohio State ambassadors are trying to figure out how they're making their way out there, and the word's getting around, and it's their world,
In Los Angeles, I mentioned before, Bob, that Los Angeles is my hometown, and I'm back there 2, 3, 4 times a year, and I've been very happy to see. There's more and more absolutely terrific vegan food available in restaurants and stores there, and clearly it's on people's minds. And so I think it's a terrific place to have the summit.
Mm-hmm, definitely. It's definitely a vegan center, But before the break, Professor Francione, Professor Steiner and I were talking just a moment about a moral dilemma, which is, I think that we know that we really have the correct moral position in being vegan, and yet we just touched upon religion for a second, where people believe that they get their morality from their religion, and their religion has told them, animals are here for us to use to do whatever we want. And I know how I've reacted to this in many cases, most recently with a cab driver not that long ago. But what do we think about that one?
Well, I mean, it's a complicated question. I mean, first of all, I don't think morality comes from religion. I mean, I think a lot of people think that what is right or wrong is what God says. But then, if that's what you believe, you're then stuck with the position that if God tells you to do something really horrible, then that's what's right. And so if God really did tell Abraham to take Isaac, his son Isaac, to Mount Moriah and sacrifice him, that would be the right thing to do. If you believe that God tells you to get into an airplane and fly it into the World Trade Center, that's what you do. If you believe that God tells you to rid the world of certain people, you engage in genocidal activity. So, the idea that what's right or wrong is what God says is a somewhat unsatisfying position. But, look, I think that, this came up on my Facebook page because we talk about religion quite a bit, and I made the point, which upset a lot of people, and as it seems that I do naturally, what I said was that if you believe in a God that tells you to bully animals, then you need to just find a different God, because, if God is all good and all loving and, is the for, if God is love, the idea that love tells you to go to McDonald's and eat a hamburger or whatever, then what a pathetic view of God. What a pathetic vision of God that is. I find it. I think. Look. When you get people like the new atheists, people like Christopher Hitchens. The late Christopher Hitchens, who say things like, well, religion is responsible for, all the evil of the world, or, he made hyperbolic statements about how bad religion was. It's not religion which is the problem. It's human beings who are willing to engage in violence who are the problem. They are the people who animate these religious traditions and interpret them to approve of violence. You can't really say that religion is the problem, because if you look at some of the most horrible people, you look at Stalin and Mao, they were atheists, so, they killed a lot of people as well. So I think that we really got to get away from this idea that the God of love sits there and says, go ahead and beat up on vulnerable beings, go ahead and exploit vulnerable beings. That's your vision of God,
So I said to the cab driver, well, if God meant for the animals to be eaten, why would they be able to experience pain? And they cry out and they scream. And he said, oh, why are you telling me this? Because, of course, nobody's ever told him that. And he actually, started thinking in a different way. And then he said, then I said, why do you get heart disease and cancer and stroke from eating them? Is that what God wants, for you? And he said, well, I have high blood pressure. And then he said, but, all black people have high blood pressure. And I said, look at your diet. And, off the cab driver went in that experience.
Yeah, those conversations never really come to a really logically sort of focused conclusion. And Gary has also pointed out, I've heard him do this many times, and I think it's quite right, people can really sort of pick and choose out of scripture, and they can do things like justify slavery or, you know, killing your wife and under certain circumstances and things like that. And I really fully agree with Gary. The idea, I could not believe in a God who wants me to commit such extraordinary acts of violence. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And right before the break, Gary, Bob mentioned Genesis 1:29, which is that passage where, you know, God tells us that we have plants and grain to eat. And it's really only after the flood, when Noah makes his covenant with God in Genesis 8 and 9, that's the first place you get this idea that, you know, everything that creeps or crawls on the earth is going to have fear and dread of you. And Noah makes a burnt offering of an animal sacrificed to God, and God likes the smell. So everything has changed kind of radically. And in this very bizarre way, God starts out making the garden this very peaceful place. And then after Adam and Eve have been kicked out of the garden, then after most of the earth gets killed for being sinful, then God says, okay, now it's really a wilderness, and you can do whatever the heck you please out there. You know, it's a very bizarre story, and it's paraleled by some things that are told in Hesiod, in Greek tradition, and by Ovid. This idea that, you know, we were originally in a golden age where everything was peaceful and everybody was a vegetarian, and it's only when people become fallen or corrupted somehow that suddenly now it's okay to eat animals. And nobody ever really explains how we get from A to B.
Well, you know, I think you know, the Old Testament is an interesting document in that regard, because you're correct that, you know, that before the breach of the covenant, there is no killing. No one's killing anyone. The animals aren't killing each other. I mean, you know, God says to humans, the herb and the seed, it shall be your food, but he also says that to the animals. And so there's no killing. It's only after the rupture, you know, after the breach of the covenant, when humans are ejected from Eden, that killing begins. And then later on in the Old Testament, when the you know, the covenant is restored, and, you know, and humans are once again in grace with God, the lion shall lay down with the lamb, and you know, none shall be harmed in all of my holy kingdom. So, you know, it's just very. But you're right. I mean, it's when we fall. It's when we buy into our material, when we neglect and we ignore our spiritual self and we embrace our material self, that it is then that, you know, we are in the wasteland. We are then banished, as it were, from God's grace, and it's then that killing becomes a possibility. But, you know, so I think, you know, yes, I mean, it, you know, depending on who I'm having the conversation with and how much time I have, sometimes I'll go into Genesis and I'll go into the Old Testament and have that discussion if somebody is into that, you know, into that literature. But, you know, I always fall back on, you know, on the idea that you can't really believe that the God of love tells you to beat up on little animals. You just can't possibly believe that for a second. What a horribly demeaning view of God, you know?
Would Jesus take pleasure? Look, the fish are suffocating. They're dying. Would a Jesus take pleasure? Oh, look, there's something. He could just make more bread, you know?
Exactly. It's a bizarre idea. You know, it really is.
Exactly. But, you know, but you can't, you know, the thing of it is that a lot of animal people are jumping up and down all the time blaming religion for the problem, and the problem isn't religion, because, I mean, you know, you can look at, the problem is human selfishness and human violence, which can seek to use religion as an excuse, or it can seek to use any other thing, any other doctrine, any secular doctrine as an excuse, whether it's, you know, just a doctrine of human superiority. And you know, we're not connected to any religious view. I mean, you know, but these secular notions, which are also, you know, speciesist and violent and whatnot. But it's not religion. That religion doesn't have a monopoly in that regard. You know, there are plenty of folks who aren't religious who buy into these speciesist ideologies, and there have been lots of them throughout history. So I don't think we should see religion as, you know, look, music.
The music means we must take a break, and we will continue with Professor Gary Francione and Professor Gary Steiner, both who will be at the World Vegan Summit and Expo You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. With Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and hey, wherever you are in the country, there is no excuse. You can go vegan because you can have great, delicious vegan meals delivered right to your door, whether you're in Piscataway Township, New Jersey, near Rutgers campus, or Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, near Bucknell, where Gary Steiner is. Greenlight Meals will deliver, greenlitemeals.com, and you can say hi to the folks at Greenlight Meals at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and they have a weight loss and nutritional consultation available from Melissa Bray. Also, thanks to sentientlifestyle.com, and at this World Vegan Summit and Expo, Professor Gary Steiner will be discussing animals in the history of Western thought and 10 mistakes people make about what it means to be vegan, and Professor Gary Francione will give us an introduction to the abolitionist approach and conduct a couple of grassroots vegan workshops, activist workshops, and looking forward to Gary and Gary being there. And where were we?
We're talking about religion, and you know, there's a point that I think that Gary and I are really in agreement on, and that is rationale. We both believe that you get to the animal rights vegan position using rationality and logic, but you can't get, you know, you can get there using rationality and logic, but you have to care about morality. Mm-hmm. You have to have a concern about morality, and you have to have an impulse to want to do the morally right thing. Gary talks about the idea of cosmic kinship. I talk about moral concern, moral impulse, but really, you need that. You need to, you know, rationality and logic aren't enough. You need something to get you to do the morally right thing. Some people find that motivation in spiritual or religious belief. Some people find it in poetry. Some people find it in aesthetics of not just poetry, but other forms of art. It doesn't really matter for me, or to me, where you get your moral impulse, where you get your moral concern, and I suspect it doesn't matter to Gary where you get your sense of cosmic kinship, as long as it's there. And so, you know, I think, Gary, wouldn't you agree a lot of people who do have this sense of cosmic kinship find it or feel it as a result of their spiritual or religious beliefs as much as others find it in secular belief?
I do think that's true, and it really reminds me of that important distinction between spirituality and sort of institutional religion. They're not really the same thing, and they have sort of ambiguous relationships to each other, but I think you're absolutely right. There's all sorts of ways that people can come to this insight and this feeling of being connected with the rest of the sentient universe, if not to the rest of the living universe, and I think that sooner or later, however people come to it, what it has to come down to is the recognition that when I look in the eyes of a non-human animal, I'm looking at myself in some sense, that I'm really looking at a being that is cosmically identical to me, where my body, the nature of my embodiment, the fact that I have certain linguistic abilities is all just kind of like a veil over my true essence, which is really something that is indistinguishable from that of any sentient creature in the universe.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, and I think that perception, the perception of, you know, the other is the self, and the, you know, and having all of the nonsense fall away, that, well, you know, I've got the ability to do calculus, or I have the ability to speak words or use certain sorts of abstract ideas, just really is just a sort of a contingent irrelevancy, you know, and that really...
Absolutely, and I mean, I think you probably would also agree with me that even though the institution of pet ownership is fundamentally problematic, the fact is that many people, in fact, probably come to the sense of cosmic kinship through their relationship, their love bond with a companion animal. And
well, yeah,
what it then takes is to sort of expand that sense that, you know, there's no real difference, essentially, between the animals that we happen to classify as companion animals and the animals that we happen to classify, whatever, as bacon, right?
Right, right. Yeah. We love some, we stick forks into others. They're morally indistinguishable. No, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of people do come to it. Oops. Oh, the end of the hour.
Well, thank you, Professor Gary Steiner, Professor Gary Francione, for being with us this week. We look forward to seeing you at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and I hope people will register now and join us there. Go to worldvegansummit.com. Thanks for being with us today.